on today's show.
Because there are other large religions in the world. In fact, by later this century, Islam is due to overtake Christianity in terms of pure numbers of those who confess to belong to that religion. But there is no religion in the world with the sheer diversity and global scope and polycentricity of Christianity. So it does not belong in any one city or site or shrine or country, does it? It is polycentric. And I think that is a wonderful apologetic to the global truth of our global God.
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined on this December 31st, the last day of the momentous year of 2023, the year of our Lord, by Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. How do you fare, good fellow?
I'll be ready to turn the page into 2024. There's just something nice about turning the page, especially on a year, you know, that was not easy. And I think there's probably a lot of this year is rivaling 2020. And I'm a lot to be thankful for. But hey, 2024, let's do it.
Don't turn the page too quickly, because we still have a show to bring you in 2023. And that is with our good friend and returning guest on the show, none other than your friend, your close friend, Chris Howells. Scott, I'll let you do the introductions here, because Chris, you and I have talked a handful of times, but you and Scott, you're actually connecting pretty often. You're part of a group that's often talking together about missiological things, and you're going to share some of that wisdom with us today, Scott, right?
There's a bridge in England. I think it's in like West Yorkshire, if I'm saying that right. Chris can correct me if it's wrong. It's named Dunford Bridge. And so I just feel like I have this connection to the land of my fathers, at least one of my ancestors, back to England. And so maybe that's why Chris and I just find some kind of connection. But probably. Chris, I think you and I became friends through Twitter, of all things, now known as X, and discussing mission stuff. And that conversation moved offline. And even though you and I have never met in person, I still really value your friendship. Chris has been a very big supporter of the show and has been a guest last year. And it was such a good episode. We wanted to have him come back. But Chris, you've gone through some big changes in your life. Could you just kind of update us on where you've been? You're no longer in Africa. Now, what are you doing?
Yeah, thank you, Scott and Alex. And Scott, we are here in England. We will readopt you as an Englishman anytime. Just give me the words and we'll make it happen. Yeah, 2023 has been epic and enormous for myself and my family. So we started the year in Uganda and we're ending it here in the UK. So we'd had 12 years in Uganda working in a theological college there, teaching and discipling church leaders for East African Church. And we're back now in the UK. We moved 4 months ago and we are going to be starting a new job next week at Oak Hill College, which is a theological training institution in North London, training men and women for gospel ministry, both in the UK and worldwide. So a big year.
Very big year.
Well, and 2023 is a big year, but 2024, we've got a few things we want to take care of as well. And just as you did last year, brought us your list of recommendations to fill our 2023 bookshelf, so too also 2024, let's fill this upcoming year's bookshelf as well with Chris's recommendations. Now, Chris, just bring us up to speed real quick. You regularly release a newsletter and compile resources from around the world of missions thought, right?
Yeah, that's why some of your listeners may have come across this. Some may not have. It's called Mission Hits. It comes out from my website, which is fromeverynation.net. So it's a monthly blog, which is trying to collate and curate and compile good quality, relevant, recent resources that could be podcasts, could be books, articles, tweets, everything really, and send it out to over 1,000 subscribers now. So it's just, I'm the geek that keeps my eye on many, many different websites and ministries and brings it all together into one easy to digest format. So that's one of the roles I play.
Yeah, Alex, you and I are like the morning show and Chris is like the nightly news. I feel like that's kind of what the vibe is here.
Yeah. I will wear that proudly. I'm the morning zoo of missions.
We're Regis and Kathy Lee, for those old enough to remember that show.
Which one am I? All right, we'll no settle comment. It offline. Coming back from that, Chris, let's count these down. And these are not in order, or they're in order.
No, it's not a top 10 countdown. The idea was really for these 10 to complement and work together with the 10 we did last year. Mm. So in effect, we have a collection after this episode of 20 books, which I think together will provide a very rich, balanced, varied, helpful, biblical, missiological diet for anyone who chose to go through it. So I've got 10 books. The first few are slightly more sort of basic, maybe readable, accessible. A few of those at the end of today's list will be a little bit more challenging and stretching, but it's not a top 10 countdown now. I wouldn't want to offend anyone by having a number 10 and a number one. So we'll just put them in any order.
And that's so winsome of you. And I'll say that with the list growing to 20 books at my current rate of consumption, I'll have made it through these in about 54 years. So we're on our way here. And why don't you give us our opening foray here, Chris, through all of your research and your global experience, this list that you've put together of top missions resources to line your bookshelf in 2024. Number one is, hey listeners, are you interested in free theological training? Midwestern Seminary exists for the church, and that vision to be for the church is the reason that they provide free resources for anyone who wants to grow in their faith. How do they do that? Through the For the Church Institute, which offers free seminary-level education to any individual interested in growing in their knowledge of Scripture, knowing the Lord more deeply, and discerning their calling and ministry. With courses ranging from New Testament and theology to the doctrine of the Trinity, find out if the For the Church Institute is the right solution for you to deepen in your knowledge of Christ. Go to mbts.edu/FTCI. Again, that's mbts.edu/FTCI for the For the Church Institute. And while you're there, let them know that the Missions Podcast sent you. And now, on to our show.
Number one of this next set of 10 is called 40 Questions About the Great Commission. Came out just 3 years ago, written by Daniel Akin, Benjamin Merkel, and George Robinson. So these are U.S. scholars and pastors and missiologists. It's part of the series of books, 40 Questions. So there's loads of these books now. There's one about angels and demons. There's one about Islam, about Catholicism, about Bible translation. But this one is about the Great Commission. So the format's always the same, 40 questions, 40 chapters. Each one is a few pages. It's thorough. It's well-researched. You could easily do sort of one chapter in a sitting, perhaps do two or three chapters a week. And so in this book, what the authors are trying to do is introduce world mission quite broadly to an audience that I think is assumed to be interested and engaged and wanting to know more, but perhaps in need of quite a solid introductory foundation to the topic. That could be a busy church pastor. That could be a member of a church missions committee, something like that. But you know, we've got these 40 questions split into different sections, like the first section, general questions like what is the Great Commission? The second question is about how the Great Commission has been understood historically. The third section is really interesting, looking at exegetical questions surrounding the Great Commission. So, for example, this word, this verb, go, you know, and make disciples, is it a kind of temporal participle, kind of as you go, or is it have a more kind of imperatival command force to it, go, you know, questions like that. And then the last two sections are looking at how the Great Commission fits in with the wider biblical theology. And then the last section is looking at some practical questions. So it's really thorough. It's really broad. It's beautifully introductory. It's accessible. And I would highly recommend it for those reasons alone.
It sounds like a great book to give to the members of a mission committee when you're trying to get something started and give them something to work through. That sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. So number two, what do we got number two on our list today?
Absolutely, yeah. So number two on the list, The Sending Church Defined. Now I'm talking about the second edition here, which came out 3 years ago. It is written by Bradley Bell. Bradley is a former missionary. He's a pastor, a brilliant writer and missiologist. He's just started working full-time for a U.S. organization called the Upstream Collective, mm-hmm. which seeks to help and support local churches to send gospel workers intentionally and with excellence. And that's what this book is about. It's trying to define and explain and apply the idea of being a local church that is sent and therefore sending. So the book is all about prioritizing and centralizing the local church in that sending process. Okay, so not to the exclusion of agencies with all their expertise and experience, but it's rather trying to say that the local church must not delegate sending, but it must demonstrate it, it must display it, live it out as a body of believers. And just quickly, brothers, so what the book does, it's very clever. There is a single sentence definition of what it means to be a sending church. And what Bradley does is basically in 24 chapters, he takes that one sentence and breaks it down almost word by word with a chapter, a small chapter on each word. Hmm. So the sentence is this, are you ready? I'm just going to read it. It'll take 15 seconds. This is the definition of the book. A sending church is a local community of Christ followers who have made a covenant together to be prayerful, deliberate, and proactive in developing, commissioning, and sending their own members, both locally and globally, often in partnership with other churches or agencies, and continuing to encourage, support, and advocate for them while making disciples cross-culturally and upon their return. So there's quite a long sentence, but the book breaks it down into 24 bite-sized pieces. And I think it's tremendously helpful for mission pastors or church leaders to think through, what does it look like to be an ascending church? You know, what does that concept involve theologically, biblically, missiologically? Again, it's digestible, it's accessible. I recommend it.
Appreciate that. It's always good to have clear definitions. Mm-hmm. Everything starts with definitions. And hearing a definition like that, realizing the burden of responsibility that's on the shoulders of ascending church, well, it's rather humbling, isn't it, in fact, Chris? And in fact, speaking of humility, talk to us about the third book on your list.
Well, the third book, there we go. Good segue. Global Humility is the title. The subtitle is Attitudes for Mission. This book's 6 years old. It's written by a gentleman called Andy McCulloch. Now, it's not a book I imagine many of your listeners will have come across. He's a British author. So my one-man plot to anglify your illustrious show it continues. I've actually got two British authors in this list of 10 this time. So Andy, I've never met him, but he blogs, he writes excellently. And what this book is trying to do is explore and apply the characteristic of godly humility to Western cross-cultural mission. So sadly, the words mission and humility haven't always come together in people's imagination. And sometimes that's an unjust characterization, but sometimes missionaries historically and even today do come across as prideful, particularly when working with believers from other cultures. So what Andy does in this book is try to show us that the mission that Christ invites us into to participate in, it must be a humble mission. We won't have time to get into details of the book, but there's different sections on moral humility, public humility, and one really interesting section on what he calls theological humility, where he argues that because Christianity is a diverse global phenomenon, we should approach different sort of varieties, as it were, of biblical interpretation from across the world with respect and with a genuine willingness to learn. And in doing so, he's clear that he's not trying to encourage a sort of relativism, theological relativism, but rather multi-perspectivalism, the idea that when we gaze upon an object from a different cultural setting, we will all be able to see that object, the gospel, Christ, the scriptures, from that setting. And when we work together with those different perspectives, we will all be enriched in that. So it's a very helpful book. We don't need more books that make us more comfortable and content and self-congratulatory. We need books that are going to challenge and prod and provoke us. And I think this book certainly does that in a really helpful way.
That looks like a book I need to pick up for lots of reasons. That sounds fantastic. And so number four, Global Christianity.
So Global Christianity, a guide to the world's largest religion from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe. So that's A to Z. This is by Gina Zerlo. She is a very significant writer in the realm, the discipline of world Christianity. She's what we might call a missio matrician or something like that. It's a rather long word, but what it basically means is a sort of mission statistician or someone who curates and communicates stats and data relating to the spread and growth and size of global Christianity today. She works for the Center for the Study of Global Christianity along with Dr. Todd Johnson. And this book is clearly presented. It basically goes through all the countries of the world from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe, and it's showing us stats and graphs and descriptions, a few pages, couple of pages for each country, about what's happening, what God is doing in those countries. What is the state of the church? How many Christians are there? Which kind of denominations and backgrounds do they belong to? Things like that. You know, there's not been an updated edition of Operation World, which many of your listeners will have come across, for over 13 years now. So this book, which was released just last year, is actually contains the most up-to-date stats available. And it is super helpful. In fact, gentlemen, very quickly, a quick quiz. I've got three questions. Both of you can give an answer and we'll see who gets closest to the correct answer. So these questions are stats from the book. Okay, first question here. You didn't know this was happening, but I'm surprising you. So first question, Afghanistan has a population of 38 million people. How many Christians approximately of all denominations, so those who somehow confess to be Christian, how many Christians are there in Afghanistan that we know of? Population 38 million in total. How many Christians? Alex, do you want to go first?
All traditions?
All traditions.
All traditions.
Anyone who would confess to be a Christian.
Anyone, I'm going to say 5%.
Okay.
You're getting a percentage?
In fact, give a number if you can. Okay. So population is 38 million.
Oh, no, but that requires math, Chris. I got into ministry, so I didn't have to do math. Come on.
I'm gonna guess less than 5. I'm going to say 3,000.
Alex, do you have a number of people? Have you worked out? Got your calculator out?
I mean, of course I'm doing this math in my head, but...
we know you never meant to say 5%.
1.9. No, that's way too many. All right, I'm gonna say 500,000.
Right. Well, Scott wins the first one. The answer is 7,500. Oh. Yeah, population of 38 million. Second question, France's Christian population was 99% in the year 1900. What is it as of today? So in the year 1900, it was 99%. Today, anyone who ticks the box on the census to say they are Christian is included in this stat. So what percentage is it today?
I'm going to say 65%.
Okay, Alex.
France, huh? I'm going to say 8%.
It is 63%. So Scott wins that one as well. So he's 2-0 up with one question to go. But Alex, never give
up. Alex is loving this. He's loving this.
I really, you know, the whole humility thing. I'm just gonna mute my mic now, actually.
There's one more. Don't give up, Alex. We've never known you as someone to give up and on a challenge. Third and final question.
19%, this is the first time for everything.
19% of the current US population is 14 years or under. Okay, 19%. What is that equivalent figure in Uganda?
Oh, like what percentage of the Ugandan population is under 18?
Under the age of 15, 14 or under.
Under 15.
So in the US, it's 19%.
Let's say 38%. Final answer.
I think it's higher than that. I think it's like 60%. I know it's really high.
The correct answer is 38%, which means Alex gets that one. Well done, Alex, but you still lose 2-1. Anyway, that is just...
Hang on. I got to get style points for getting the exact number. We got to give some style points for that. Okay.
That was fantastic.
See, never underestimate. No, don't misunderestimate me.
So that is just a small snapshot of the many, many statistics we get in this book, Global Christianity. I think it belongs on the shelves of anyone who wants to understand better what's happening with world Christianity today, what God's doing in the world, and where and how we can be praying about those things.
Let me just say on that note, too, we need to tell this story of Christianity as a global, not just to have the fact book and drill in on one country or another, you know, Joshua Project, Operation World, we have resources for that. But to be able to look at it and say, Christ is reigning, he's advancing his kingdom. And look at this, never in the history of the world has there ever been anything like this. All of these nations, millions upon millions of people worshiping this crucified and risen person from Judea? What could this be if it's not true, right? I think that's a powerful apologetic. Painting that picture of global Christianity is super important, and it invigorates the imagination, doesn't it, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the words apologetic you use there is so helpful, because there are other large religions in the world. In fact, by later this century, Islam is due to overtake Christianity in terms of pure numbers of those who confess to belong to that religion. But there is no religion in the world with the sheer diversity and global scope and polycentricity of Christianity. So it does not belong in any one city or site or shrine or country, does it? It is polycentric. And I think that is a wonderful apologetic to the global truth of our global God.
Amen. I like the way you said that. Okay, so number five, I do own this book. I have not read this book.
So, right.
Thank you, Michael Scott.
So the fifth book is called Apostolic Imagination, and the subtitle, Recovering a Biblical Vision for the Church's Mission Today. This is another one from just last year. It's written by J.D. Payne, who is professor of Christian ministry at Samford University. He blogs, he podcasts, he publishes extensively in these fields of world mission and church planting and such like. But that subtitle sums it up: Recovering a Biblical Vision for the Church's Mission Today. So Payne believes that the church today needs to rediscover the mission of the New Testament church. So he's not calling us to somehow kind of time travel, transport ourselves back to the life and culture of the New Testament church, but rather to develop an apostolic imagination that is grounded and founded in the New Testament scriptural witness that we then bring into and apply to the contemporary age. J.D. Payne points out how there is so much confusion. There's a lot of mess and muck and muddle in the world today when it comes to what is mission, what is the church called to do in this sort of realm of mission. And rather than sort of think about what does mission look like in the contemporary context, he does do that. But first of all, he wants to take us back to the New Testament witness and say, what do we find there and how do we bring that forward to today? So I think it is a really good introductory book for anyone who is wishing to think more about what mission is and needs to be in today's world. And what could be more important than that?
So we're dealing with very practical things. And number six, it is a practical concern, although this looks like it's a dissertation been published. So tell us, what's number six about?
Number six is a book that, again, I'm not sure that many of our listeners will have come across, although anyone who follows me on Twitter will have, because I am continually trying to sort of publicize this book. So it is called Reimagining Short-Term Missions. So it was released last year. It's an edited volume, actually. So 17 different chapters by 17 different authors or more. Actually, some of the chapters are multi-authored. The editors are Forrest Inslee, who works in Christian environmental advocacy, and Angel Byrne. She works for an Anglican church in Seattle. And the contributors, the authors in this book, are mainly practitioners. They have experience in either leading or hosting short-term mission teams. And in fact, helpfully, some of the chapters feature the voices of a group that we rarely hear from in the STM short-term mission literature, namely indigenous recipients of short-term mission teams from the West. So why do I include this book in the list? Well, as your listeners know, there is no end to books about short-term mission. But the major contribution of this one that I think is unique is that it works through this paradigm of co-powerment. I think if you're looking for practical tips about how to lead a short-term mission team, you're not going to find it here. But I think what you get here is something much more significant, much more foundational, which is a challenge to think carefully about the manner and the mode, the posture and the stance and the attitudes we bring to our short-term mission efforts, and to be asking ourselves tough questions that can be painful. Are we achieving what we think we're achieving in short-term mission? What is being heard through our words and our actions that we may not realize we're even communicating? That the question is asked, are we even hurting others in our well-meaning short-term mission efforts? So the authors reject the kind of ethnocentric paradigm that says we are theologically and morally and socially, financially superior to you, and we bring you our blessings. And the authors reject the empowerment paradigm that says we've come to try and gift you and share with you some of the power we possess so that you can be better. The paradigm they use is this idea of co-powerment, which is the idea that mission fundamentally, particularly short-term mission, will always be a kind of mutual exchange where both sides can be made stronger or more effective by working together. So they call for short-term teams to go in a spirit of authenticity, collaboration, curiosity, and teachability. It's not a negative book, brothers. It's not a nasty book. It's not calling for a moratorium on short-term mission teams, nothing of the sort. But it is challenging us to reimagine how we do it. And I think for that alone, I think it is a challenging, thought-provoking, but really important book. And I really think it deserves wide reading.
Yeah, and just a thought, I wonder what some of the sociological assumptions are in a work like that, right? When we're talking about, you know, empowerment, marginalization, and what worldview that's coming from, obviously within a Christian worldview, but even what direction within that that we're taking. But nevertheless, some of what you're saying there, it resonates with me as biblical, at least from the standpoint of think of Romans chapter 1, where Paul says he wants to be mutually encouraged by each other's faith when he comes and preaches the gospel to them. If anyone could have been imparting a spiritual gift to others, it would be Paul the Apostle. But in fact, he wanted to be encouraged by the saints and believers in a place like Rome. And so I think at the very least, yeah, we've got to ask hard questions about how much do we bring value to those on the field that we serve, and how much are we really actually receiving God's grace through them? It's an important question to ask. So bring us the next book in the countdown, good sir.
Absolutely. I think it's seven we're on to, isn't it? Reading Hebrews Missiologically. So here's another recent one. In fact, you know, this podcast is nothing if not cutting edge, isn't it? This book came out earlier this year. It's a 2023 book. It is an edited volume. The editors are, you'll have to forgive me if I'm saying the name wrong, but Ebenezer Uger, Edward Smither, who you've had on the show recently, and Linda Saunders. These are folks who are working largely through Columbia International University in the States. And what they've done is they've set themselves the challenge of going through the general epistles, so the non-Pauline epistles, starting with this volume on Hebrews, but there's others to follow next year. I know James and 1 Peter and others are coming. And what they're doing is approaching those New Testament epistles missiologically through a missional hermeneutic, one might say. So I think many of your listeners will be familiar with this idea that's become very in vogue in recent years. And I believe rightly so, that it's not that mission has a biblical basis as such, that we must scour the Bible for a verse here or there that calls us to go to the nations, but rather that the Bible itself has a missional basis, that it is written from and for a community on mission in context. Mm-hmm. And so what this book is doing is applying that principle to a part of the Bible, the general epistles, where that is rarely done. In these biblical theologies of mission, what often seems to happen is you'll go through the Old Testament, the Gospels, Acts, obviously. You'll then have a bit of time in the Pauline epistles. And then we seem to jump often to the kind of glorious, multicultural, multi-ethnic, eschatological throne room visions of Revelation, almost as if those general epistles in the middle don't exist. But this book is trying to correct that. So it's an edited volume. Just one example of one of the chapters, our friend of the show, Matt Bennett, he writes one of the chapters. I mean, he's a guy who writes an article before breakfast each day and a book before dinner. But, you know, he's written the first chapter, and it's a brilliant demonstration of how Hebrews kind of narrates the storyline of the scriptures. And in doing so, makes sense of the gospel itself for those who are unfamiliar with the basic categories of the gospel. So Matt shows how the meta narrative that Hebrews provides is really important in presenting the gospel to Muslims and helping them to understand what atonement really is in its biblical context, not what they might perceive it to be. And that's just an example of what's going on throughout the book. Reading Hebrews missiologically, bringing fresh ideas and concepts into our thinking by approaching relatively unmined books of the Bible through a missional lens. I'm looking forward to the future volumes coming out. This is the first of the series. And it's really helpful. It's not an easy read in the sense that you want your Bible open next to you, perhaps a pen and paper too, but it's worth the time that you would spend on it.
Nothing about the book of Hebrews is easy.
Okay, if this was the only seven books we talked about, I would be excited about this episode because my wish list just got bigger, but we still have three more to go. So number eight on the list.
Number eight. So these final three that we are going to move through probably quite rapidly are all actually, we're stepping now into some sort of deeper, heavier missiology. Okay. So these books are physically quite fat. They're full of long words. They're quite heavy. I believe long words actually weigh more than small words. Anyway, that's a theory, my theory, and I'm going to stick to it. But these are heavy books academically and physically, but they are going to stretch us and deepen our thinking. So this first one of these final three is called Mission Between the Times, and it's by an Ecuadorian missiologist called René Padilla. He was born in Quito. He grew up in Colombia. He studied in Wheaton College on your side of the Atlantic, and then he came over to my side and did his New Testament doctoral studies at the University of Manchester, I think in the late 60s. And then he was engaged in the early 70s in sort of student work across Latin America. But it's really the first Lausanne Congress of 1974 where he came to the attention of the global church, because Billy Graham and John Stott invited him to give one of the plenary speeches at that very important conference. And even today on the Lausanne website, it is called The Speech That Shook the World. Now, that may be slightly exaggerating, but it certainly was a significant speech, because in that speech, what he tried to do was shift global evangelicalism away from an exclusively prioritist stance that was thought to have said that the task of mission is solely to proclaim the gospel and save souls for heaven. I think that's probably a slightly unfair caricature of that position. But anyway, what this speech did and what he wanted to do was shift global evangelicalism into a more holistic thinking. Now, some may not appreciate that transition. I get that. That's okay. These are complicated debates about holism against prioritism, the role of social action in the task of mission. I know you gentlemen have covered it from a lot of different angles on this show. But, you know, at the very least, we must acknowledge that this is a debate, and it's not a debate with liberal Christians. It's a debate amongst evangelicals with biblically minded and biblically grounded Christians. And I think René Padilla's work is a really important sort of turning point in this debate. And I think he articulates the holistic stance very persuasively and powerfully. And it's been very influential, this speech and his wider work. And so this book is really a summary of many of the speeches and articles and sermons he gave over the years. He passed away a couple of years ago, but I think it's an important book. Whether you agree or disagree, I think it is a good book to engage with and deepen our understanding of this really important question.
It's so interesting because we, Chris and I and some other friends were talking about this, not this book, but about Padilla and about this concept last week. Out of that came a really interesting observation that I never thought about before, but even just how different American evangelicalism and British evangelicalism are and how they were shaped differently by different forces, cultural forces so we tend to look at a lot of things, even though we're both in the Western tradition and have a lot more in common than not in common, there are some things that are just different. And so I like the idea of hearing from other Christians, evangelical Christians, that have a very different perspective. And I think this obviously is a pretty important work if you want to understand the full orbedness of evangelical Christianity. So thanks for bringing this book to our attention.
Great. So there's just two more to go. Another one that's quite deep and challenging, but super helpful. This is from a gentleman called, I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name, but Jehu Hansiles. The book was released a couple of years ago. It's called Migration and the Making of Global Christianity. Mm. So Hansiles comes from Sierra Leone. He serves as professor of world Christianity at Emory University in the US. He did a doctorate in Edinburgh under the late, great Andrew Walls. And a lot of his work, Hansiles's work, is in the field of world Christianity, particularly in the complex, crucial connections between globalization, migration, and mission. And so this book, what he's trying to do is recognize that the way that church history and missions history is often told is through the kind of lens of power and institutions and almost kind of great man theories. And what he's seeking to do is purposely, proactively shift the focus onto the massive role played by migration and migrants in Christian history and missions history. He argues that this is rarely acknowledged enough by mission historians. And in fact, I've got a quick quote here, if I may. So He argues that focusing on the agency of disempowered groups produces a more complete understanding of the making of global Christianity, at the very least, an explanatory framework that emphasizes ways in which mundane events, marginalized persons, and commonplace experiences shape historical development is deeply subversive of master narratives and constructs centered on the use of power. So what he's trying to do is just show how our typical mission histories are often sort of lean towards histories that are perhaps better attributed and accredited and written down, often from Western settings. And he's trying to draw attention to often less well-known but very powerful global forces of migration and how God has used them in the spread of the Christian gospel worldwide. It's a complex book, but I think it's a really eye-opening book to help us just reassess what we think we know about the spread of the gospel, both through scriptural history and then through Christian history.
And just a reflection on that, Chris, too. Again, some of the terms in your description of that, you know, that it sounds to me like there's a bit of a critical hermeneutic there. There's something that I would want to be concerned with. We don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater of what God has done in Christian history. And some of that is through great men and great women and the Western quote unquote perspective on what God has done in many of these nations on this side of the cultural landscape. But at the same time, we completely resonate with that idea that God uses not just the William Careys, not just the Lottie Moons, but uses the unknown and the anonymous and cultural forces and trends that are not attributable to one person's direct action. Look at something like the Reformation. It's not just the work of a Martin Luther. It's not even just the work of a Gutenberg. It's all of these trends coming together and coalescing along with things like the end of the Black Death and things that opened up Europe to be thinking about questions of justification and whatnot, and political forces as well. And God uses all these things in the tapestry of the global story that he's telling. And I think anything that opens our perspective to see things more from heaven's perspective and not just centered around the works of men that we know by name, I think that's an edifying endeavor.
That's right, Alex. That's very helpful. And just quickly, if I may, I think that's why having a selection of books, you know, we had 10 last time, 10 again today, that brings us up to 20. What we're trying to do here is give a broad range of reading. In one of the books, the first book I mentioned today, you'll get a lot of mini biographies of some of those characters you just mentioned, the Careys and the Lottie Moons and so on. But if that's all we have, we may have an incomplete understanding of the fullness, the richness of God's working throughout missions history. So when you put all 20 books together, here's a 2024 challenge for you. Put those 20 books together, dive in, get through them. And I think it really would enrich, give us a much more sort of full vision of what God has done and is doing in the world today.
So this is last book is a book I've had highlighted as one I want to read in 2024. I've been thinking about this book for a while and the title is great. So tell us about book number 10 and why we need to read it.
It's a fascinating title, isn't it? Drawn from Deuteronomy 32, I think. The title is Their Rock is Not Like Our Rock. Subtitle, A Theology of Religions. It came out 8 years ago. Who's Zondervan. It's by Dan Strange, friend of the show. I know you've had him on before. Mm-hmm. Some of your listeners may know him through his work with the evangelical theological journal Themelios. He's also written a few popular books recently, such as Making Faith Magnetic. But this is a heavy book. All right, this is a 2 to 3 pages a night kind of book rather than a 40 pages a night kind of book. So bear that in mind. It's based on his doctoral studies, and then he later taught a lot about theology of religion at Oak Hill College in London. So theology of religion, so what is that? Well, the idea is that the global church today faces, you know, the challenge and the reality of living alongside and amidst non-Christian religions. But how do we perceive and view, how should we understand these religions? Are they these kind of brutally demonic attacks that must be yelled down and destroyed? Are they God-given pathways to Jesus, signposts directing people to the true faith? Are they divine tricks planted in the world to distract and deceive us or test us? you know, why do non-Christian religions exist? These are important questions, aren't they? But it's amazing how many of us just fail to think through these questions adequately, even though our answers will really shape a lot of our missions practice and thinking. And so we want to be well-informed, biblically grounded in some of these questions. And that's what Dan does. He's trying to present here a reformed theology of religion. Now, he stands on the shoulders of giants. We'll go right back to Calvin in this book, back to Bavinck and Van Til and John Frame and Chris Wright, more contemporary theologians, missiologists. But his basic case is that humankind is created in God's image. It is made to worship, to be worshiping beings. But our inherited sinfulness means that we suppress true worship of the true God. We turn to idols. And crucially, Christ not only subverts those idols, as in he exposes their error, their foolishness, but and thus stands ultimately in opposition to them, but also Christ fulfills them, as in there is some degree of residual remnantal truth that those non-Christian religions unknowingly depend upon. And that truth can sometimes be identified and exposed and even employed in our evangelistic witness to adherents of those other faiths. And Dan calls that idea subversive fulfillment. Now, it's quite heavy. There's a lot of work that goes into that 30-second summary I just gave. But at the end, there's a couple of chapters with pastoral and missiological applications and implications. So it is a book that is not to be read quickly or sort of easily, but it is a crucial, massive book on a crucial, massive topic. And what better thing to do in 2024 than dig deep into such an important topic? And so I do recommend it.
You know, you said this wasn't a hierarchical list, but that felt like a really strong, final, momentous recommendation out of all of your items here. And well, our bookshelves will be well stocked in the year ahead, huh, Scott?
Yes, I'm very excited about adding these books to our collection. And thank you so much for doing the hard work, Chris, of reading these books, summarizing for them, categorizing them. And I think you're doing our listeners a huge favor by doing this. So thank you again for coming on our show and helping us to think more broadly, think better, think about what's happening in the world of missions. And thank you for all your work on your blog, too. That's a huge, huge resource for the mission community. Where can people find out more about you? How can they connect with you? Where can they find your other writing?
Sure. So probably going to the website, www.fromeverynation.net. There's a contact page on there. And whilst there, people can sign up if they wish to Mission Hits and receive this monthly blog with links to good quality missiology resources. There's some really exciting looking books coming out in 2024. And they'll all be linked to through Mission Hits.
Chris, thank you. And we are grateful for your important work. And that's it. That's a wrap on this 2023 year of programming from the Missions Podcast. But don't worry, we're not going anywhere. Tune in again a week from tonight as we come back to you in the new year with new content and with lots more on the horizon. The Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE. To learn more about ABWE, go to abwe.org. And of course, you can support the show as we aim to bring you the type of content that will get you out on mission and that will strengthen you in your faith. You can support us by going to missionspodcast.com and hitting the support tab at the top of the website there. And one of the best ways you can support us, not only through your giving and through your prayers, is by sharing the show with a friend. That always helps, as well as leaving a 5-star review. And of course, if you don't love the show, don't lie, but go ahead and just put 5 stars on there anyway. And then in the review, you can be honest, but put 5 stars in the rating and leave us a review in your podcast platform of choice, whether it's Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate each and every one of you who've done that. That helps other people discover this content. It helps these podcast providers know who's listening, and it encourages us as well. And we're encouraged by you. And so until next week's episode, go and make disciples of all nations, and we'll see you then.